Jonathan Schwartz on thejonathanstation.com. Now, I'm going to talk to Doris Day. Interesting. And I never approached her at all. She approached me. She called up one day. She found a number, and I said hello, and she said, "I'm Doris Day." And the following conversation began. Doris.
Hello, Jonathan.
Hello, Doris. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can.
Wonderful. Doris, listen to this.
Yes, and because of you, my
love,
my wishful dreams came true.
In my uncertain heart, I am only certain.
Something.
Oh, how, you with Frank.
How long has it been since you've heard that?
I don't know. And I have all my records, and we're all put away. Mm-hmm. Everything was put away when I moved. Uh-huh. And I didn't think that I would hear them anyway. You know, I didn't have the radio on all day long, waiting for, you know, to hear myself. I just didn't expect to. And that's the truth. That's the truth. And then I'd hear some dumb one that I didn't like. And then I thought, that's that. I'd really turn the radio off if I did hear it. But
what was a dumb one?
Pardon me?
What was a dumb one?
A dumb one? Oh, many.
name one.
The Purple Cow. That was because they started having Purple Cow restaurants, and who cares? And then Marty comes to me and says, "Oh yeah, they're opening everywhere. You've got to sing this." Oh. And that was unbelievable.
Uh-huh. Who else was feeding you dumb songs?
Mostly Marty, I guess. I never knew, but then I thought, too, that it must be coming from, the company, Columbia. And I know that everybody was upset. Frank was upset, and he bought out because he didn't like the songs that they were giving him. Mm-hmm. I think that everybody there was upset. Don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There was something strange there. I don't want to mention names, so... But it was difficult. I used to, you know, go into sing, and there were things that I loved, really loved, and then I'd never hear it again. I would never hear it until the Bear family.
Yeah.
Did that huge thing for me.
But
which
that was
I knew nothing about the Bear family.
That was years later. That was years.
Years later.
I mean, decades.
Yes, it was later. It was strange. I didn't know anything about the Bear family. Mm-hmm. And it came in this huge package, and Terry breathed in. And I said, "Look, this came from Germany. What's this all about? I know I had some relatives there. Are they sending presents?" And he laughed, and he said, "Oh, it's the Bear family." And he said, "Oh, let me open." So he opened up all these things, and I was devastated. I could tell you, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. These wonderful books and pictures and all my songs. Mm-hmm. And I was looking through, and I said, "Oh, my, I didn't know I sang this much. Mm-hmm. I didn't know I did this much." And he was laughing, and he said, "Oh, Mom, this is really something." And I said, "Why do you suppose they did this?" He said, "For a reason, I guess, to make some money." Uh-huh. I said, "But I haven't been singing. I haven't been singing in a long time. I didn't expect anything like that." Mm-hmm. I really didn't. Uh-huh. And anyway, he was just thrilled. So he said, there's more than one set here. You know, maybe you could give some to friends. And I said, I'm not giving these out. I don't know what's in here. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to touch it. Mm-hmm. Well, he took one, and he called to tell me that he loved it and that he wanted me to hear it. And I said, no, I'm not going to. If I'm upset when I hear my songs, it's going to really, really hurt me. And I just don't want to put myself in that position. I'm going to send them a wonderful note and thank them, but I'm going to put everything else away. And he was furious with me. But that's the way I felt. And I said, I could maybe play one song and be upset. Maybe I didn't do it well, whatever, you know? I hadn't heard any of these things in so long. Mm. And I said, why they're sending me these now? It's late, it's too late. I'm here and I'm not singing. And I put everything away and they're still away.
Well, they're not away anymore.
Well, you know what? A very good friend of mine, she said, I have to tell you now, I have almost everything you have sung. I have it. And I said, where do you have it? What are you talking about? And she said, what do you put them on? You know, I don't have any of the newfangled stuff. So I don't know what she was talking about. And she said, oh, I have it on, what would they say? iPod.
Uh-huh.
An iPod. And I said, what's that? She said, so she told me, she said, I'm going to bring it. Well, she brought it that night, and she starts it, and I was crying. I was literally crying. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh my God, I remember that. And she said, oh, I love the way you did that. Mm-hmm. And I looked at her. When I think about that moment, it's not easy to talk about it, because she said, you must be proud of that. And I looked at her, and I I told you I was really taking it seriously, and I was in tears, and I said, well, I'm so thrilled that it was in tune. I said, I didn't miss one there. And she started to laugh, and I was laughing. And I said, I can't believe what I'm hearing. And she said, really? And I said, well, I'm going to get one of the books out, and maybe, you know, I'll listen to a few more, because the one doesn't mean that they're all good. And so I was really funny about it. And then I did open up the book, and I heard one, and I felt okay about it. I thought, that's in tune, that's okay. And but I didn't hear any of the rest. I put the book back, and it's still in the drawer, locked in.
You know, there are so many wonderful, wonderful songs. How could you go wrong? You were a woman with perfect pitch.
He said, I'm a woman with perfect pitch. You know who would have loved that was my father. But when I was young, in grade school, as a matter of fact, my father was the organist in Cincinnati in a huge church there. And he had the finest group of men in his choir. And people would come from all over just to hear his choir. And they always talked about my father having perfect pitch. But I was a kid, and, you know, I didn't pay much attention to that. But he had all kinds of German clubs, big clubs by the hundreds in Cincinnati. They loved to sing. Maybe you don't know that. The Germans loved to sing.
Oh, the Germans, yes, of course.
Yes, and Cincinnati is a very Germanic city. My relatives all moved there. They came from here, you know, starting with grandparents that I didn't even know. And then they came when they were very young, and my mother and all my aunts and uncles were born in Cincinnati. But they all sing all the time, and everybody was just in awe of my father's work. And everyone talked about him having perfect pitch, and I paid no attention to that. You know, I was a kid. But then
you were you were a kid with perfect pitch.
Well, I didn't know that. But I was dancing then. I started dancing when I was 5 years old, and I loved my mother for that, because she gave me everything, you know, toe dancing and ballet dancing and acrobatics and singing a song and making up a dance, and that's what I was doing. But nobody heard me singing except the people at the dancing school, and I just sang. I love to sing. Anyway, that's not the point that I'm making. My parents didn't stay together, which was a scandal in Cincinnati, in our hometown. And I was so proud of him, but this came out on the first page in the newspaper, and my mother was just in shock, because he was having an affair with my mother's best friend. And this was on the front page, and I knew her best friend, and I knew the best friend's two daughters, and my mother used to be taking care of them all the time at our house. They would stay for dinner, and my mother just loved them and sewed for them, and in the meantime, their mother was with my father. And that really upset me. My mother divorced him as soon as she could. We moved away. I just never thought about my father again. We were talking about pitch. And when I started singing with an orchestra for the first time, there was something in between that you perhaps didn't know about. I was in a very bad accident.
I do know about that.
The accident stopped my dancing to a,
What was the accident, and where did it occur?
It wasn't right in Cincinnati. It was like 30 miles away in a town called Hamilton, Ohio. And I was with just some friends, and my dancing partner, his older brother, was in the car. They said, jump in, because one of the men had just been given this car. It's a used car as a gift, but it was so exciting for the boys. And a train came along that was going into Cincinnati, and it was late. And so the train usually would come through Hamilton slowly and leave slowly. And this particular night, they came through fast because they were late. They were late getting into the main city. And we had had a Coca-Cola and a little sandwich or something, and we were on our way back to find the house where my mom was waiting for me. And they didn't have the big, what do you call those white things that come down? The railroad crossing.
Oh, I see.
They didn't even have any there. And there we were, all four of us or five, and didn't even know that we were on tracks, train tracks. So along came a train fast, and it was winter, and the windows were closed. We couldn't even hear them coming. And so all of a sudden, the front of the car was right off. And I was in the back seat just about and screaming. And my dancing partner's brother, he was hollering, and I had a bad thing happen, because in that kind of a train, the cars are all different sizes. And a wider car came and really bashed into us and knocked the driver back from the windshield, and his girlfriend, she came back too. Well, I had my leg and my foot in front of me to brace me, and then I was leaning way back. Well, the seat came back with him in it, and he wasn't very thin. He was a big guy, young but big, And he was in that seat, and he came back on the middle of my leg and my foot and smashed it. And there I was, and didn't feel it. And now I know, when I read about accidents that happen, I realize that nobody ever feels anything from the shock. I had no pain until much later. And they had to carry us out, you know, of the car and get them out first. And he was big. It took a while to get him out. And anyway, we all went into the hospital right away. And I had a problem, which is I really was laid up for a long time because everything was broken where his seat hit. And the problem with me was that my bones weren't knitting, and that took almost a year with me having every bit of medication that was out on the table for me to take, because the bones weren't knitting. And I didn't realize it, but my mother knew that something terrible might have to come of it. She didn't tell me until much later that the doctor was hoping that he wouldn't have to amputate. And when I think about that, I couldn't have done my movies. Think of that. Yeah, there I would have been. Oh my gosh. Anyway, that didn't happen because I remember, but it took many months before everything started to knit. And when it did, then, you know, I still was fragile. And, it took close to 3 years before I was able to walk without pain. And that's when I was 16, just going on 16. Mm-hmm. And how they worked it out, I don't know. But I was, while I was getting better and feeling better, someone found a marvelous vocal coach. And I didn't have much to do, you know, was I was sitting around waiting for my leg to heal. And he would come over with the guitar, and Jerry, his son, my partner, would come. And Jerry and I would sing, and he would play for us. And he said, you know what? You could be a singer. When you get well, you wouldn't have to dance. You could be a singer. And as a matter of fact, what's the group's name from Cincinnati, All Brothers? Andy Williams. Mm-hmm. Andy was the youngest, and they lived right near me when I started to work on my singing. And I think that Grace Rain is the one who said, maybe you would like to sing with a group. And I wasn't even 16 then. I was younger. And we would gather around the piano, and they had me sing the lead, and they wanted me to join the group. And my mother would be with me, you know, and she was excited, and I said, well, you think that I would like that? Would I like that more than just singing by myself? I don't know. I'm excited about it, but I don't really know what I should do. And then as the days went on, and we were all kind of, you know, thinking about it, because I loved the guys. They were just great to me. And but then Grace felt strongly about it. She said, I think you should sing alone. And, I felt terrible, you know, because they liked me. And they really wanted to have me in the group. But anyway, that's the way it ended. And they used to talk about that later, but that was really funny. But then she said, no, she wanted me to sing alone. It was just meant to be, she said, and that's it.
And she was right.
He said she was right. Well,
this is just great.
It's great. Look, you know what? Everything fell into place in my life. What can I tell you? God is good.
Let me ask you something, Doris.
Sure.
I've always thought of you, aside from a miraculous musician, to be a superb actress. I go to the Hitchcock film, specifically, The Man Who Knew Too Much with Jimmy Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a hell of a performance you give.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
How did you become an actress?
How did I become an actress?
Yes.
I have no idea.
You just acted?
Yeah, but you see, I didn't go to a school or anything. Uh-huh. No one taught me anything. I just knew the main thing I have to do is listen to what is said to me. Mm-hmm. Because when I was shoved into testing for Michael Curtiz, the first film that he ever did in his own company, this just happened by accident because I happened to be in Los Angeles for another reason. Mm-hmm. So anyway, my agent told me that he wanted me to test, and I said, for what? He said, for a movie that Michael Curtiz is doing, his first movie in his, with his own company. I hear it's a wonderful script, he said, and the girl singer has the main part. And I said, well, first of all, I'm not an actress. I've never acted. And he might like my singing, but as an actress, you know, he has to find the actress first, because they can always put in a singer, but they can't just put a singer in if she can't act. And he said, that's true. That's really true. And I said, I'm not an actress. Anyway, he talked me into it, because you were asking about acting, and you wondered, you know, about that. So as I told you, when he gave me the scene that I was going to play, I really thought about it, and, you know, I was really trying to get out of it. And I hadn't even read the script, which was short, you know, what I had to do. It was a scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so he took me to a really, really lovely restaurant. We had a wonderful dinner, and he was talking about it, and he said, oh, you could live in California, and you could stay here. You wouldn't have to tour the country singing. And he said, it would just be wonderful. I know you would love it. And he was just, you know, giving me the con job. And I said, look, what is going to be is going to be. And isn't that funny? Oh, and he laughed and he said, well, I have faith in you. He was always telling me that, you know. And he said, so after we finish eating, you're going to go over, you're going to study, read the lines and really know them good. And then you get into bed early, and I'm going to be picking you up a little after 6 o'clock. I don't know what time he's going to see you during the day, because a lot of the girls are going to be there.
Now, Doris, excuse me for interrupting, but you said something a few moments ago that I think is certainly one of the keys to acting, and that is listening.
That's the whole thing for me.
That's what you said.
Yes.
If you're a good listener, you have half of it made.
Well, I thought so. I thought so, too, that if you really listen, you answer.
Mm-hmm.
And you answer, and that's acting.
Uh-huh.
That's acting as far as I'm concerned. And you can't, you don't have to put anything on and act like you know the ropes. And then, you know, overact or underact. If you're afraid that you might say the wrong thing, then you would be underacting. And if you're coming out blasting, you're overacting. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to, all I have to do is listen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. I can't explain it in any other way than that.
Doris, let me ask you something. What was the name, if you can recall it, of the first song that you ever recorded?
I wish I could tell you,
mm-hmm.
but I can't.
Well, that's all
right. I really can't.
But the thing is that you recorded so many standard songs, so many wonderful songs, as well as some goofy songs, too.
Oh, a lot of goofy songs.
Uh-huh.
but you know what? you can't just sit back and say, this is a goofy song and I don't care about doing it, but I'll sing it if I have to. Can't do anything like that. Just can't.
Mm-hmm. And
everything you do, you have to do your best. And if you can sing, sing it. And you have to do the best. And make it sound as good as you can. And there are always people who like goofy songs. Remember that.
That's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fellow who happens to love Shanghai.
Oh, Shanghai.
I'm right around the corner in a phone booth, and I want to be with you tonight.
Yeah.
That's a goofy song.
Yeah.
You know?
That was fun to sing, you know.
Yeah.
That was silly and fun.
And a big hit record.
Was it?
It certainly was.
It was a hit? I didn't even know it. I swear to you, I didn't know it. I never knew if I had a hit or if I didn't. Nobody ever mentioned it.
Really?
It's the truth.
Well,
I was never aware of things like that. I was so busy doing this and doing that. And you know, the minute I started, and then I star in that film, think of that.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of that, it's just unbelievable to me. Because when they called on me, and they had put makeup on me and did my hair, I think I fell asleep under the dryer. They couldn't figure that one out. But they got me all ready, and that was late, kind of late in the day, too. I was just standing around and having a good time and looking at everything on the sets, and, you know, I had never done that. And so I was really thrilled to see things going on. And then they brought a man who was an actor there, and he came over and said, would I like to rehearse? And I said, oh, that would be nice. And then they called us. And we went in, and I knew nothing about when they, you know, get started. I was looking around and waiting, and he said, just relax, do what they say. And I did, and he started with the scene, and I answered him. And when Michael Curtiz was there, he said, cut. And we just stood there, and I said, now what do we do? Mr. Curtiz is coming over. And that's when I met him.
Mm-hmm.
This is Mr. Curtiz. Oh, nice to meet you, sir. And he kind of whispered to me, he said, darling, that was very good. That was very good. And his speech was really cute and funny.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, then he was getting really busy, and my manager was there. And he said to me, sounded really good to me. I said, what else would you say? I remember that. I said, you're going to come in and tell me it was horrible? I'd faint. What else would you say? I'd be moaning. And I said, look, you don't have to keep telling me that. I said, I did what I had to do. And you do what you have to do, and you do the best you can. And if you win, you win. And if you don't, you don't. And everything is like that.
Well, what you did was to listen to the other actor.
Yeah. That was it. I just listened to what he said to me.
Doris,
hold
on a second. I just want to say, this is Jonathan Schwartz. I'm talking with a woman whose name is Doris Day. Perhaps you've heard of her. what of all of your hit records is your favorite song?
My favorite song of my hit records? I didn't know all the hit records. I didn't, you know, I didn't know what was going on, whether it was a hit or not a hit. I was so busy.
Well, sure, you know,
films.
Sure, you know Secret Love.
Oh, I love Secret Love. I love that. It's Magic.
Let's play Secret Love right now.
Okay.
Once I had a secret love that lived lived within the heart of me. All too soon, my secret love became impatient to be free. So I told a friendly star the way that dreamers often do, just how wonderful you are and why I'm so in love with you.
Doris Day, Secret Love. So many millions of people all over the world know that record and love it.
Am I talking too much? Because, you know.
Not nearly enough.
Maybe I'm getting too many things so that it makes it so, it prolongs it so.
But Doris, you didn't listen to what I said. I said not nearly enough.
Not nearly enough? Oh, is that what you said?
I didn't hear it. Okay. Now, of all of the standard songs that you recorded, what come to mind, two or three songs, that you really cared for? Standard songs, not necessarily hit records, but songs that you recorded. What songs that moved you?
Oh, well, most of the ballads, you know, if they said something, they moved me. You have to wait, you know, and...
Well, like what, for example?
My One and Only Love. Oh, I adore that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, actually, I think that song came to us through Sinatra.
It did?
I think so.
You mean he sang it, or?
Yeah, he made a record with Nelson Riddle. Did you ever record with Nelson Riddle?
No.
Uh-huh.
I never had that opportunity.
Uh-huh. He was
Nelson Riddle, I know. I wanted to go to Capitol.
Why?
If I could have. Not that we didn't have, you know, good orchestrators, because we did. And I think they did some wonderful work with me And I was never, ever picking on the music, you know. I was unhappy with a lot of the songs, but, well, you know how I felt. So I wasn't going to stay unhappy. If I didn't really think that it was worthwhile, I would do the best.
Why didn't you go to...
I wasn't unhappy.
But hold on a second, Doris. Why didn't you go to Capitol?
I couldn't. I couldn't get out of my contract unless I'd pay what Frank Sinatra paid. He made a deal, and he had to spend to get out of it.
Did you know any of the composers, like Harold Arlen or Richard Rodgers?
Not many, no. Because very, very seldom do they attend, you know, when you're doing the songs. And I didn't know many at all. And I wish I had, so that I could have told them, you know, how much I liked them, their work, and what they did, and just everything. But
you know what a wonderful
Annie
role.
Connie Conn and Julie Stein, I knew.
Well, sure.
And I just loved working with them.
Uh-huh.
And the man who wrote, which one was it, Secret Love or
Sammy Fain?
Sammy Fain, ah, super. And the writer was...
I know who it is. I just got it in my head. Paul Francis Webster.
He was my neighbor. That's, of course, he was my neighbor. And he used to come up all the time, you know, and when he was doing the work for me, he loved coming up and slip into the music room, you know. And yeah, he was a great guy and so good. Oh my, they were both so great.
Can you play the piano?
I can't play at all. My father just dismissed me. Well, I was little, and he was insisting that I learn to play piano. That's a thing that I'm very sorry about. But I was dancing, and I was very young, and when you start learning piano, oh, that is tough. And, you know, and I didn't practice because I was dancing. I was either standing on my hands and practicing that, or going to dancing school, and he gave up on me. He said, you know what? I don't think you're too interested in being a piano player. And I said, oh, well, I'd like to be able to do it, Dad, but I really like dancing better, and I don't have much time to learn the piano.
Can you read music?
I know, looking at it, what it's going to sound like, and I can do it, sing it.
Uh-huh. I see. So you can sort of read music.
Yeah, I don't know what the notes are on the piano.
You know what a wonderful role for you would have been?
What?
The lead in South Pacific.
Well, they offered that to me.
Really?
Yes, they did.
Well, what happened?
They offered me South Pacific, and I guess I don't even know what I was making then. That's the truth. I never knew what I was making. Except the first week that I was at Warner's. I have to tell you this. This is funny. When I got the part and we started the movie, the first week when I came home with my check, my mother was out in the garden, and I came out, and we were working 6 days a week then.
Mm-hmm.
On Saturdays, all the studios were open, and I came out and with my check, and as when I was with bands, I always just turned my check over to my mother. And so I was still doing that when I walked into the garden. She was out there, and I handed her my check. And she gave me a big smile, and she said, that's a week. And she opened it, and it was $400. And she looked at me, and I was beaming because I hadn't even seen it. And she said, it's what you made with the band. I don't know what she was expecting, and I wasn't expecting anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's the truth. I said, $400? Yeah, it is the same. And my mother had this funny look on her face. You made that, you could have stayed with the band. She said that. And I said, you realize what I'm doing? And I said, they don't know if I'm going to be good. They're taking a chance. They're taking a big chance with me. I said, you know, Mom, I would work for nothing. And she said, well, don't let that get around. She looked at me like I was nuts. And she said, you don't go around saying things like that, Doris. And I said, well, I'm telling you that I would have worked for nothing. And getting back to, see, that's the way I was about money.
Mm-hmm.
And I never knew what I made. Mm-hmm. And what was the question again?
Oh, well, I was talking about the idea of you as the lead in South Pacific.
Oh, okay. Well, it so happened, and I didn't even know it, that I must have been making a lot of money for a film. And I met with them up at the big hotel, and we talked, and everything seemed to be gung-ho.
Who was them?
The writers.
Rodgers and Hammerstein?
Oh, sure.
So there was a meeting at the Beverly Hills Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And it was between you and Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein?
Sure. And it was not a big, long meeting. It was brief, and everything seemed to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
But there was time in between, and I suppose that I know that my husband must have been, you know, wheeling and dealing with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I never knew what was going on. I was probably working on a film then, and I was busy. So it didn't matter to me. It didn't matter to me. I knew that it was a big hit in New York, and I had heard all about it, and I knew that, and it sounded great. But they all sounded great to me. I was just happy to be doing what I loved. And then, who was it that was in that?
Mitzi Gaynor.
Mitzi Gaynor. She gave them a very good price.
Uh-huh.
I heard about that later.
Uh-huh.
And she's talented, you know? Uh-huh. So, you know, and she wanted that movie. She wanted it more than life itself, apparently, you know, to reduce the salary to very little. And that's how it happened. And she, you know, she wanted to show them that she could do it. And but I was working on something else at the time, and she probably wasn't. But, you know, that's the way it was meant to be. I had no feeling about it whatsoever. It was meant to be that she'd do it. God bless her. I had my own work to do, and that's the way it was meant.
I'm Jonathan Schwartz, and I'm talking to Doris Day. Doris, I have a favorite album of yours, easily. And it's the album you made, I believe, in the afternoon, one or two afternoons, with one of my favorite musicians, Andre Previn.
Oh, Andre. I love Andre. He was just so, so good. And you know, we didn't rehearse or anything. Because I had never met him. He came to the house, and we talked about what we would do, you know.
Let me ask you, Doris, where was the house?
In Beverly Hills.
Do you remember what street it was on? It's not that important. I was just wondering.
You're testing my memory.
No.
You know, if something is important, I want to remember it, I do.
But Doris, you see, I grew up in that area. And so I was just wondering where you might have been.
It was a beautiful, big, wide street that went right down to the deli. Big, wide street. All the other streets are very narrow.
Well, all of the streets...
Started with a C, I think.
Crescent?
Crescent. That's it. Crescent Drive.
Uh-huh.
And it went right up to the hotel, and it went right down to Nate and Al's deli.
Uh-huh.
Where I spend a lot of time.
And you lived on Crescent. So Andre Previn came to your house on Crescent.
Mm-hmm.
And you picked the songs.
Yeah, we did. And
Give Me Time, the song Give Me Time?
Give Me Time? I don't know if... I think it was one that he wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
It could be. I was willing to do whatever he wanted. wanted to do. As long as, with, you know, rehearsing, if I didn't think that it meant, really meant something, I would discuss it with him and say I would rather do something else. But everything just fell into place.
Well, let's hear you sing with Andre Previn at the piano, Give Me Time, okay?
Yeah, good.
Here we go.
Give me time, I'll give you love. Give me time, I'll give you rapture, dear. Time and time alone brings love into its own. Give me time. Let me do what must be done. If you do, then love will capture dear. Only time can cure love that must endure. Give me time. I played around. It was a crazy game. And since then I found that love is not so tame. And so I guess I'll take a chance on winning. Gotta make a new beginning. Give me time, I'll give you love. Give me time, I'll give you rapture, dear. If you only
was Doris Day singing Give Me Time. And the album has, of course, Marlene Dietrich's song, Falling in Love Again.
Oh, my. Oh, I love that song. Uh-huh. I really love that.
Was that album made in one or two sessions?
Oh, sure. Uh-huh. We went from one to the next. Uh-huh. And if he felt good about it, I did. Because uh-huh. I don't like going over and over and over things. You know, it's wonderful if it's just fresh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What kind of a fellow is Sinatra?
I loved him.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. He was just super.
In what sense?
In every sense, with me.
Uh-huh.
He was just very caring, very sweet. You know, this is very interesting. There was a party on the set, and it was a birthday party, and and we were all around the birthday table. Anyway, we were standing there, and Frank always had an entourage, as you know. You know, he had his guys around him, mm-hmm. and they were all there, and I don't know, I guess there was something, I needed a handkerchief, I needed, something to blow my nose, and Frank was standing next to me, and he said to one of his men, "Get some Kleenex for Doris." And the man who was on the set all the time ran to the dressing room, which was nearby, and gets a box of Kleenex. And I'm standing there. I think I might have been having tears for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And his man threw it. Like he would be throwing it to a man, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he meant to throw it to Frank, I don't know, but he threw it to me. And I threw up my hands, but I caught it. And I wasn't upset about it. Frank went around the table and cut through the people standing around, all around, because it was a birthday. And he went over to that man, and he hit him by the neck, walking him to the dressing room. He was letting him have some stuff, I'll tell you. And when he came back, he said to me, "I'm sorry about that." And I said, "Frank, I caught it." He should give me a little accolade there. That didn't worry me. I caught it. And but he was always like that. He was very sweet with me. Never anything else. Always. And I just, you know, I wish that we could have done some really good things together.
Well, you made that film that we're talking about, Young at Heart. Wasn't Van Heusen terrific?
Oh, God, yes.
He was like a child.
Everything he did, you know, was so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like he behaved like a child, except that the talent for writing beautiful melodies that he possessed grew into an adult.
Isn't that interesting?
Uh-huh.
But you know what? Now, I'm not going to say that I knew all the writers well, because I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You have to remember, I wasn't just singing, as most singers are. You know, and maybe they get more involved with the writers of the music than I had time to do. I was, I guess, the only singer in movies. So I knew them by the songs, but I didn't spend time. I was never in clubs where they might come in and get to be friendly with me. And they didn't expect to come to the, you know, when we were going to record. It's interesting they didn't do that, because I would have liked them to come. But the thing is, they probably felt, we're the writers. And now we're going to sit there, and she's going to be thinking, "Oh, I wonder if they like the way I do this. I wonder, you know, I wonder if they're going to like this." They felt the right way, and I appreciated that. I would have not liked for all the writers to sit there and stare at me. I wouldn't have liked that at all. But I wanted to do the best, and I was always hoping that they liked what I did, and that's all I asked for.
Doris, what's your life like these days and over the last period of time?
What's my life like?
Yeah, what are you up to?
What am I up to? Oh, Lord. Well, I have a big house, and I live in Carmel, as you know. And sometimes when I think about it, if I had known that the weather is strange, that it gets very hot and it gets very cold in one day. It's, you know, it can be without sun in the morning and it's really chilly and you put the heat up. And then around 11:30, noon or so, oh, God, it's so hot in here, I can't stand it.
Mm-hmm.
And you walk around, you start peeling off clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hot. And then 3:30, 4:15, you start closing up. and you start putting more clothes on. This is the truth. And even if the sun is out, it gets colder and damp because I'm about 3 miles from the ocean. And for one thing, I had, for the first time in my life, bronchitis. And I had a terrible time with it. And I coughed and coughed and coughed and coughed over a month, from morning until night. And I finally was able to get over it because, you know, many people don't. And it was very bad at this time. And I was so sick with it. And I was very nervous. And anyway, I was able to, you know, get over it. But my throat, I can tell, I can hear as I talk to you that my throat and my voice sound different than before. But then people tell me that it doesn't. But I hear it. And if I could, if I ever, you know, would get rid of this, and I got to think, maybe if I move, I would get rid of this and I could sing again, because I was still singing here. I wasn't recording. I didn't say, you know, to Terry, God, I'd like to sing again. And he would have said, well, you sound great. You could do it. I didn't do that. I came here and I thought, no, I'm going to do all my animal work. I have that. And I've done so much singing. You know, I've got stuff that nobody's heard anyway. So why should I start singing when I sang so many great songs and nobody heard them, nobody wanted them? And so I'm not going to be bothered with that. So it didn't really terribly upset me. But I'm still hoping. I would just like to sing for myself, you know, and see if I could really do a good job. My throat is not right. I've never talked to you, but how do you think I sound?
If you were in a room and I was in another room and a microphone was turned on and someone said, who is that? I would listen and say, she sounds like Doris Day.
You would?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, you know, people tell me that. I thought they were just saying it. They didn't want me to feel bad, you know, about if they say, oh, yeah, your voice is totally different. Oh, yeah.
Well, you see, Doris, I've heard you speak so often in those movies. So your speaking voice is about as familiar to me as your singing voice.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
I want to play another record of yours that's a particular favorite of mine.
Okay.
And that is Let's Take a Walk Around the Block, that was written by Harold Arlen, Yip Harburg, and Ira Gershwin, two lyricists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a difficult song to sing. And you do a terrific version of it. Do you remember who wrote the arrangement for it? Was it Frank Comstock or Frank Duvall?
Oh, I don't know, because both of them did so many for me.
Uh-huh.
I talk to Frank Comstock all the time.
Do you really?
Oh, he used to take care of my little baby. And whenever I was in a hotel working with the band, we were always there maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, you know. And my mother and my baby would join me.
Mm-hmm.
And Terry was a terror.
Mm-hmm.
He really was. And he wanted to get out, you know, in the hotels and run all around and go down on an elevator by himself. We had to put a saddle on him. And anyway, he just loved him. Frank Comstock loved him. And he said, look, I love that kid. He's a hellraiser, but I love him. And I'll take care of that kid upstairs. And Frank always did that. He was great. And I'll let you know, if he did, Let's Take a Walk Around the Block.
Here's the recording that we are talking about.
Someday we'll go places, new lands and new faces, the day we quit punching the clock. The future looks pleasant, but at present, let's take a walk around the block. not, we'll send the folks cables, accumulate labels, buy souvenirs till we're in a hawk. Right now we are flat in old Manhattan. Let's take a walk around the block.
Oh, I loved it. I loved singing that song. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to sing it again.
It's a difficult song. There are many complicated words in it.
Oh, well, that doesn't matter, does it?
Well, you got to learn them.
That's true.
You got to learn them. As I understand it, Columbia may put out a box set for you. It's entirely possible. I hope they do.
Oh, really?
Because there's no such thing.
It's true. Really true.
And, you know, just every, even Johnny Ray has a box set.
I'm
just joking.
You know, maybe they did it for everybody else but me.
they'll do it for you.
I don't care. If they don't want to, that's okay with me.
Everything seems to be okay with you.
Absolutely.
And I'm delighted to hear that that's the case. I send you my love and the affection of everyone listening to you today. And
thank you. How sweet.
And we will talk again.
I'd love to.
Thank you, Doris Day.
And thank you.
Bye-bye.
I enjoyed it. And I hope I didn't gab too much.
As I said, I wanted more.
Okay, well, anytime.
Bye-bye.
You just let us know now.
I'll let you know now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
With a song in my heart, I behold your adorable face. Just a song at the start, and it soon is a hymn to your grace. When the music swells, I'm touching your hand. It tells that you're standing near, and at the sound of your voice, heaven opens its portals to me. Can I help but rejoice that a song such as ours came to be? But I always knew I would live life through with a song in my heart for you. Heaven opens its portals to me. Can I help but rejoice that a song such as ours came to be? But I always knew